Flame On is presented by the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic book shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geeky programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Welcome to Flame On. I'm Brian, and I'm here with a smaller cast today.
Oh, we're tiny.
Intimate.
Travel-sized.
Y'all, both of those are good.
So, as you've heard, we have Jeff and Oral.
Hi.
Hello.
And we are here to talk about probably the most exciting and water cooler moment generating show of the last few months,
specifically for nerds.
That's true.
It's crossed.
Yes,
it's crossed over.
You could be a fan of sci-fi. You could be a fan of westerns, and both of which would.
You could be a fan of philosophy and have a field day with this show.
Comparative religions, if you want.
That's true.
We're talking about Westworld. Now we talked about this on the show before. I would refer you back several episodes. It was a main cast recording. Believe it was in October. Yes, it was in October.
It was after the hurricane.
Yeah, after the hurricane. October, main cast recording.
Damn hurricane that did absolutely nothing except stop us from going to Atlanta.
So in truth in advertising or truth in lending, whatever, we were reached out to by some of the creative marketing people for Westworld to help advertise and share the word about the show. And they specifically invited us to attend a panel up in Atlanta and a screening, and then also go to their VR thing in New York Comic Con.
And meet an effing astronaut.
It's true. So they have sent us things. I think, Oral, you got to see the show before it was released.
Yeah, and it was – keeping my mouth shut was actually simpler than normal. Because I'm just like, I don't want to ruin anything for anyone.
Right.
I'm telling people, hey, I've seen it. You gotta watch it. Like, you gotta watch it.
And you told me that. And I was like, I would love to watch it, but I'm in New York for New York Comic Con. So it's tough. But, the VR experience, I did go at least to the lobby for it. I think I may have talked about this. And they did a really cool job of setting up what you basically kind of experience in episode 2.
Right, with William walking in and then choosing his hat and general accessories for when he gets to go into the world.
And whether or not he would like to have a shag while he's, I don't know, getting ready.
Slutty yeah. Host bots.
They're kind of slutty. But that's fine. There's nothing wrong
they're
with
liberated
that.
They're liberated hosts.
Exactly.
That's
liberated.
Right.
But no, they're not.
No, they're not.
They're in bondage.
So we have had a very sort of not complicated, but they've been very interested and very interested in getting the word out specifically through our show. So we're very excited to do that. We obviously
and thankful
of certainly, especially after nothing really kind of panned out.
I mean, truth be told, I would have been watching this show no matter what.
Well, and that's the thing.
Agreed.
When they reached out to me, I said the same thing. I said, look, we're going to watch this show no matter what. We're going to cover it to some extent no matter what. But we, of course, love to get the word out. And I feel like whatever they've done as a marketing agency and whatever the show creators have done, Lisa Joy and Christopher – not Christopher Nolan.
Oh, hell. The other Nolan.
The other Nolan.
The American-sounding Nolan. The one who was in charge of Point of Person of Interest, and he also was he helped write for a lot of the Nolan movies.
Yes. It's his brother, right?
Yeah.
I'll pull this up while we talk. They have done an amazing job of making sure people are going to watch the show.
Yes.
I think this is HBO's new Game of Thrones.
And they,
not that Game of Thrones is gone, but if you're looking for that next thing, I think this is now it.
And that's HBO. They realize that Game of Thrones, now they've confirmed in the last – like the next two half seasons are going to be it. They had to start thinking, what's our next big show?
Jonathan Nolan.
Yeah.
Let's put this out there right now. We're going to – We basically, as of this recording, watched all but the last episode.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
episode 9 aired 3 days ago.
So we are putting this out on the Friday prior to the last episode airing. So we are going to talk about any and everything up through the
episode
penultimate
nine.
Episode.
A very nice clavier or something like that.
Well-tempered clavier.
Well-tempered clavier.
Yeah, which is a Bach reference, J.S. Bach.
I love looking up the titles for the episode because it tells you, like, hey, this is what this episode is going to be about. And, you know, would you care to explain?
Well, so I have a feeling – okay, I can talk to the music side, a well-tempered clavier. A clavier is the predecessor to the piano. Okay. A well-tempered clavier is a tuned piano. So the tuning that you use to figure out what notes are what frequency, that's a system that's called tuning. Well-tempered was the tuning system they used back in J.S. Bach's era.
And you do it with instruments?
Yeah.
Because it's a well-tuned instrument because everything's working according to plan.
Right, and you're matching the frequency. So yes, so very much so metaphorically in this episode – everything does seem to be working according to plan. Whose plan is a whole other thing.
Exactly.
But let's back up. Let's talk about sort of what leads into this show. Then we'll talk about some of the sort of episodes, not episode by episode. We're not going to do that, but sort of the themes that we saw early on, sort of our experiences at the beginning of the show, and then we'll kind of come up through the current. So Westworld, if you don't know, is based off a Michael Crichton movie, not a novel, although did he do a novel eventually?
Nope. Okay. He just wrote and directed –
the screenplay. Yeah, he did the thing. So Westworld was a movie back in the 70s.
Yes.
That was about a android-driven Western sort of theme park.
Well, it was one a of theme four. Park, yeah, that had multiple worlds to inhabit.
They had Future World, Westworld, I think a couple other ones, a Medieval World or something like that.
So random aside, are we expecting there may be some...
Well, they had talked about that in the first episode coming out, and there was references to – I forget like the name of the company was the name
Telos.
Of the whole park.
Telos, yeah.
Yeah. So they were like, well, does this mean there's going to be other worlds featured? Who knows?
Right. They didn't – I mean this is a 10-episode story that may or may not be pretty self-contained, but we do know they are doing at least another season of this.
And Jonathan Nolan has already said too that this is in no way a direct – like when they talk about an incident 30 years prior, it's not – directly linking the movie, it's basically an homage to like something going wrong.
Yeah.
Prior.
And that's I really love that because there are so many people who haven't seen the original source material, and while this is a world built on that foundation, it's like a house. You only want to see the house.
Right.
The foundation is there, and you're happy that you have a firm and strong foundation. And then if you want to go back and you check out the bones, you check out the bones. But it's been a world into itself, and that's what I really appreciate about this series. Just seeing like the twists and the turns, having these like greater – like this time to explore the ideas that the original movie may have created or
– even just touched on in the original movie.
And how – the ideas of what we may have then have completely transformed and changed because, you know, it's what, 50 years later? Not really. Like 40 plus years later?
Yeah, it was 70s, so yeah, 40 something.
Yeah, so like seeing, you know, the treatment of women or just hosts in general, having this idea that no matter, you know,
you could make it a gender thing, you could make it a race thing, you could make it any kind of servitude or lesser role. You could easily place a label on that for the host versus the human.
And my favorite sort of metaphor gateway into this show is the world of an MMO.
Yeah.
I see very, very often in Westworld, the show, these ideas that have come out of online gaming, online role-playing games, and how, okay, you have a character enters into this world.
You have NPCs all scattered around.
NPCs on their loops doing their kind of pre-programmed sort of storylines.
As soon as you engage with them, you engage in whatever side quest they have.
Final Fantasy XV has just come out, and very much like that, where you can go off and kind of do whatever you want in some ways, it's a lot like that. I mean, this world isn't open-ended in the sense that there's just nothing but. Like you eventually hit a wall, though they haven't shown that. But it is bounded, but there's so much in there you can explore.
It's a sandbox.
It's a sandbox. Yeah, exactly. So that metaphor for me. But like you said,
not just that, but also there are cheat codes.
Oh no! See,
like every the whole, time, like match thing. I'm like, that's really cool. Why wouldn't you tell people, hey, if you need to do something really over the top, well, you can also effing do that in Westworld.
And then it comes sort of with a sense of privilege in that not every character, not every person that uses this game gets the same experience. And obviously there are some people who pay a lot more for it or have that status bestowed on them for what they do that they get those kind of
especially because when you separate – the only people getting into Westworld, into the park – are the obscenely rich.
Yeah,
of course.
Because it costs $40,000 a day for, you know, William and Logan to be there.
And that, if you go by the timeline theory, was 30 years ago money. It's probably inflated. Men in Black probably. I mean, Men in Black's a freaking own one of the shareholders.
Well, let's talk about those characters in a second. But let's touch on the world itself a little bit. Western, sort of ambiguously placed, but imagine any cowboys and Indians Western, and it's that.
What I still don't know. Stagecoaches,
trains, the whole thing.
It's out there, but it looks like it's part of, like, they've basically have built this complex. I don't know if it's completely isolated in a bubble. I imagine there's some kind of a barrier. Like I don't know if it's
a geodesic dome.
They haven't shown any sense of that boundary.
But they've shown that there's a greater underworld.
Yes.
And everything kind of peers through
it's
that.
It's like a Disney park or a Universal sort of situation where there is the tunnels underneath and there's the control.
It's an inverted Olympus.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so.
And
well, there's certainly that underworld model too. Yeah.
Yeah, there's the part that, you know, when you see them all, like you have the gods and sort of like the demigods milling around the like the living quarters and
the
giant
the view of the overworld itself,
which is very what was that
it's
thing
Clash like, of the Titans
Clash of the Titans where you look into that thing. So the other thing to say is this world is very self-contained and they don't show the outside world very much, but you do realize through little bits and pieces of dialogue that the outer world in this universe is they've solved all the problems of scarcity.
There's nothing left to dominate anymore.
There's no risk. Life is abundance, and there's just so much.
They've cured all ailments.
It's like a utopia, and the only thing you can really do that gives you any sense of risk is to come into this park. So that's the space you're in. Now, the characters in the very beginning, one of the first characters you're introduced to is Dolores. Rachel Evan Wood?
Evan Rachel Wood.
I always get that.
And Teddy. James.
Well, hold on, one at a time, because I want to give Dolores her due, because I think more so than Teddy, although he's very important.
Also, I want you to know that there is a Tandy Newton cheering section coming.
You just wait for this, because that's going to be big. So Dolores is this female NPC. And from the beginning, you know she's an NPC. There's no question we know what she is, right? And she has her loop. In fact, the show, that first episode, does a real sort of methodical job of demonstrating that sense of Groundhog Day, like just is that loop.
Right.
And you think kind of, oh, okay, she's this sympathetic ingenue, farmer's daughter, sort of in this going to town, finding a stray cowboy or whoever. And then she comes back and there's this whole encounter with her family being robbed or, well, murdered.
Murdered slash robbed slash raped slash
no.
Right.
Ransacked.
So, and so Teddy, like you were saying, is sort of this character you're introduced to very early on as well. Cyclops.
James Marsden, yeah.
Yes. And like he is
the whipping boy science fiction
it's true.
Genre known to man.
Well, and that's the – like they both have the same kind of instruction. They're both waking up somewhere.
But he's coming in through a train and we find out that that's kind of the metaphor for their entry into the world.
There's the host, which are the NPCs.
The robots,
and then there's the outsider or the
guests?
Guests or the NPCs call them – the host call them something else. Call them
visitors?
Some kind of like newcomer.
The newcomers.
Okay.
So basically like the intro, which is only like the first 10 minutes, you're led to believe because of how Teddy's entered, like he's a person. He's not a host. He's come back to experience Westworld,
right.
And he has this Dolores character that he fraternizes with,
yep.
And like that's the one he comes back to see.
And then only after their story plays out to sort of a tragic end – do we get to meet a third major focus in this series, the Men in Black? Ed Harris, fabulously portrayed. And he's very much playing this role that is sort of visually symmetric with the Westworld movie, the android that actually goes rogue and starts killing people.
Oh, Yul Brynner?
Yul Brynner's character, right.
His character is very arresting.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
There's, when he enters, there's no sense of compassion or
joy. He's a force of nature.
Yeah. And it doesn't seem like he takes any pleasure and out of anything he does.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, like, he's hollow. Yeah. And it's funny, like, I love seeing that, like, juxtaposition of these beings that we think of as empty, because, you know, yes, they have these intricate moving parts, but they have no, like, true animus. They have no soul in our minds. And so, you know, we think of them as empty. But, you know, this flesh and blood person is walking around creating these horrific, horrific, like, scenes of carnage. And
I mean, basically, the first time we meet him, he ends up not – they don't portray this, but we think he rapes Dolores. Like, he's introduced in a very visceral, terrible way.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the real kind of example of that is when Teddy tries to fight back, and he shoots at the Man in Black, and – basically, Ed Harris stands there long enough to say, "This is, it's funny. You still don't know, you know, what I am and what you can't do,"
right.
And then just slowly proceeds to kill him.
Yeah.
I think the thing that got me the most, because, you know, that first time, you know, oh, there's always like thieves trying to rustle cattle, like that. Mm-hmm. That's a part of like the American mythos,
right?
But then to see that, regardless of whether, Teddy is there or not, regardless of whether there is like an actual host with them, they murder that family and they rape Dolores and her mother's corpse.
Yeah.
At the end of every evening.
At the end of every evening. And that's I think that's what kind of struck a nerve with me, knowing that, you know, even when they're not completely there for people's amusement, we, like, the humans, the operators, the, like, behavioral and the narrative side, don't give a flying fuck about, you know, compassion or some sense of civility.
Like, well, they make that point very clearly, and so this sort of bleeds into the background or the control areas, the tunnels, if you will.
Where the livestock is kept.
Where the livestock is kept. And the programmers, the behaviorists, the staff, like, they routinely march these automatons around naked. And in fact, there's a scene, I think, in a later episode where one of the techs, like, covers up one of the automatons, one of the hosts. And like, the guy scolds him for it. Like, what are you doing? Why would you do that? This is a robot. This is not a person. You need to remember that.
Yeah. And that's how they justified
it. Was that Ford?
I was Ford, I believe.
It was Ford.
So Ford is Anthony Hopkins' character. And you clearly get this idea that he has been around.
It was, what's his name? It was the younger guy of the two coders.
Oh.
Cause it was Tandy Newton, the Asian guy covers up her, and then he walks in on her.
No.
I think Ford does it first.
Ford does it first.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he comes in. He's like, "Why are you dressing it?"
Right. Like, so he dehumanizes by saying it instead of the male gender or female gender. Mm. So that's another character is Anthony Hopkins, like
Walt Disney.
Walt Disney. I don't know if there's another good analog for this, but yeah, very
John
much.
John Hammond.
Yeah.
John Hammond. Yeah. And he's introduced pretty much around the same time that Jeffrey Wright's character of Bernard is introduced. And Bernard is one of the most senior sort of programmer, behaviorists, however you want to look at it. And you see him, I think, dealing with some of the hosts to try to repair them.
Seems like he's Ford's day-to-day
handler for the
general running of the park.
Right, and chief, like, programmer. Because
Hand of the king.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so the idea that they've just pushed out a software update that allows these hosts to now have memory of their past lives.
Reveries,
they
call
it.
Like small little instances, not like actual specific things, but small instances of, like, you know, someone touches your hair and your eyes crinkle because it reminds you of something.
Yeah, and they have certain body motions, like one woman, like rubs the side of her cheek, and that triggers a memory in her code of some previous, like, heartfelt moment.
And that all of this is geared towards making them more believable and more representative of what you would expect of a human in this game, and to make it more realistic. So, I mean, these are all the sort of characters you get. You get into Teresa, who's like the operations manager of the park, who you find out.
Quality control.
You find out as Bernard's like kind of like love interest slash
enemy. Buddy. Frenemy,
yeah. There's a character, and I forgot the actress's name, but she was in the middle. No, not the middle. The Raising Hope.
The one who plays Elsie?
Bernard's assistant.
Yeah.
Elsie.
Yeah, she was also in the Riches, the Eddie Izzard con artist FX show.
About that. Yeah.
She was like the main daughter.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I knew she was. And so there's this sort of generic like cop that works for Teresa. So you get.
You mean the Hemsworth?
Oh, that's the Hemsworth?
That's the oldest Hemsworth.
Oh, I didn't
know that. Hemsworth, I believe.
I didn't realize that. He was a Hemsworth. Okay, that makes sense.
All the Hemsworths be working.
So you kind of get these sense for these different characters. And then you meet Maeve.
Tandy Newton,
who I had not seen in quite some time.
I remember having a huge crush on her during Mission Impossible 2.
Is that when she –
That's the first time I ever saw her.
I don't remember where and when and what. But I was like – I knew she looked familiar, and then we talked – Oral and I talked about her specifically being in the show, and I was like, oh, yeah, Tandy Newton. That's right. So Maeve is the
– Queen of the Fairies.
The Queen of the Fairies, yes, but also in this, the Queen of the Madam. She's the Madam of the whorehouse in the saloon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the most powerful person in Westworld.
She is. She knows all the cheat codes.
She's been – okay, so what's
She
nice,
got the Game Shark plugged in the back of her.
Nice. What you kind of realize over the course of the narrative is that there are some androids that have been around longer than others. And we'll get to like maybe sort of later the sort of end game of that. But
They say, I think flat out on the first episode, that Dolores has been there for 30 years.
Dolores is one of the oldest.
Yeah, she's
I think one she of was
the oldest, the original.
But yeah. Maeve has also, I think, been around for quite a long time. And Maeve has this very amazing sense of droll – kind of like ennui about everything and she experienced from the beginning.
Right.
You know she's not really satisfied with her place. And over the course of the 9 episodes, you kind of start to understand that she has been and all the androids have been used in different storylines. And a lot of those, I mean most of those have been victimized. Yeah. Because either they've been raped or used for people's pleasure or shot up in a robbery or whatever.
Or like Dolores's father, the original father at the first episode before he gets decommissioned, they find out he was a part of a cannibal cult storyline previously, and he actually starts quoting lines from when he was that character.
Yeah, that's right, like Shakespeare.
It's like, God, they really went through all sorts of different stories. In the past 30 years.
So you get the sense of these people being recycled. And then again, this feeding into this idea that they've been recycled. So they know they've experienced these other lives, these past lives. And unlike humanity, where we have this sense of memory that's sort of fleeting and all that, these people, these hosts, they relive their past lives.
Well, but as far as Ford knew or anybody else knew, when they wiped them, they were erasing right. Or they were basically taking all the memories that they were using and kind of putting them in a back office mode in their memories so they won't access them.
Like an archive.
Yeah like an archive. Mm-hmm. And they're finding out from the first episode on that that's not entirely true.
And it wasn't until I think I'd seen them go through their past iterations a couple of times that I realized they're like it's PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
It's never a happy memory.
Oh no!
It's always something brutal. And Maeve's is one of the worst because like in my mind she's out. She's a homesteader. She's like nobody's around. And then Ed Harris just fucking shows up. And just decimates her life, and we know that like she's had problems before, and I think we're left to assume that this happened before the reveries,
right?
So like you know when she commits suicide, it's like oh some reason she just remembers the death of her child. Let's just wipe her clean, and you know I think as much as I love Dolores and I love how far she's come, because we see a lot of Westworld through her eyes. For me, Maeve is that defining character.
Because she has so much more agency.
Yeah, yes. It's she has self-determination. Yeah. I was just about to say that. She decided that the way I've been treated and the way that I have been limited is unacceptable, and I'm going to rewrite the rule.
Right.
And when she does that and she, you know, uses what she's been programmed to do and what she's learned to do now that she's been aware of this, like, other world, how she manipulates people is just an amazing thing for me. Like, yeah. I love her.
Her story more so than Dolores, and certainly more than Teddy so far. Like, it demonstrates some of the beginnings of the philosophical and religious themes. And one of those is samsara, where there's this sort of sorrowful, like, just cyclic thing that they're dealing with in their life. Rebirth, death, rebirth, death. Where they're sort of stuck in that one karmic level.
Mm-hmm.
And Maeve is one of the first characters to sort of step out, see this larger system, and sort of
– and call it what it is, bullshit.
Right. Yeah. And then start to actually chart her way out of that narrative, both literally and figuratively. And some of the best moments later in the series are when she is given these powers from these those two coders you were talking about, from one of them anyway.
Felix is my husband. Oh, I love like him so.
He's very sympathetic. I mean, that whole thing with the bird was lovely.
Mm-hmm.
But like gives her the powers of narrative. So whereas before only the programmers and like Ford could sort of redirect the narrative midstream, like, mm-hmm. you know, make changes. Now suddenly she can walk around her part of the park and basically direct everyone around her to do things by talking about them as the storyteller, as that third person. And that was another thing that, like, that sense of playing with the idea of story and narrative and the sort of cool, like, metaphor of storytelling through this world. That was also kind of another nice layer of kind of a meta-fictional layer that I really thought was cool.
No, I was about to say, it's very meta.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she is a part of the story, realizes that, you know, there is a screen, there is a reader, there are these players. And so she herself becomes that, but still plays the game.
Yeah. Right.
And, like, later, actually in this most recent, and I know we're jumping forward, but no, it's only fine. For a point, in this most recent episode where Bernard is doing a diagnostic on her and seeing her look around and then go into that sort of head cocked, glazed, almost Chobit sort of look, and being able to lie to him.
But you could tell too that during that scene, like Bernard, the responses he was getting, he knew something was up.
Well, he was watching the diagnostic on his thing,
going, right? As she was responding, no way this and makes... finding all sorts of new pathways. Because I think that was in a previous episode. That was really cool when she started to realize how limited she was based on her programming. It showed the conversation chain as she was constructing sentences,
yes.
Like. Here you say this word. These are the four choices you have to continue on in the sentence. You chose this word. Here's right. The next one.
Which from a software development perspective, just I'll talk as the nerdy programmer here, that was really a cool thing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of this show that's dealing with AI and sort of the storytelling and dialogue trees that is really cool from like having had to build those things in games or in simulations. Like that's cool to see this part of this narrative world.
Yeah.
But what I love about Maeve is I think that moment for her of self-reflection is really when she can see her own programming and then actually tries to like modify the parameters herself. Like they give her the little diagnostic tablet thing and she gets to mess with her own little stats.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of those moments of it's self-actualization. And again, it's that sort of metaphor of you're stuck in this circle of karma and you suddenly now take that next step to come out of there and go to that next level. I was thinking it when I was seeing that this most recent episode, sort of a Gnostic sort of idea where you have like the universe that's a lie, which is the simulated world, and then you have the outer universe.
Mm-hmm.
But another thing, another kind of, again, there's so many different ways to look at this. So many thousand faces for this hero. the Orphic idea where you're kind of descending into the underworld. Maeve very much so goes into the underworld, literally goes below.
Man, that's a hell of a way to get there. We're going to burn ourselves down.
Stab me and let's be riddled with bullets like Bonnie and Clyde.
By the way, we're going to fuck as we're burning. Because, you know, may as well.
I mean, and I don't know who plays that. So we haven't mentioned that character. I don't remember his name.
Who? But he's Paolo from Lost?
Oh, that's
him. And he was also Xerxes from 300.
Okay.
You see it at all, aren't you?
I didn't know. I know where he's from. So, like, that character is really cool and his sort of outlaw posse.
He's got the exact costume of Yul Brynner. The jacket, like, the button.
Oh, does he?
Patterning. It's black. It's all black. And I think Yul's – and they actually had, like – I think Yul Brynner's outline had a cameo in one of the previous episodes when they were down in cold storage.
Yeah, in the lower levels.
Yeah. But yeah, no, that button across getup that the bandit has is like the Yul Brynner jacket.
Yeah, so that's another character who Maeve recognizes as sort of a kindred spirit and who would be willing to break out of their programming. And that whole moment when she's like, I can open the safe for you and show you what's in it. And this will be the thing that proves that I know what I'm doing and I'm kind of elevated. And they just open the safe and there's nothing in there. And that whole moment is really kind of important and huge for those characters.
You watch the host's heart break as he questions his reality.
Which those moments – so one of the things about this show that's also really cool is the actors get to do a lot of different things with their characters, both like, you know, playing this sort of – somewhat robotic, but usually they're pretty whatever. But they have those different modes they go into.
There's a term for it, the something mind. Basically, like their self.
Bicameral?
Bicameral mind.
Okay.
So as soon as they go into robot mode,
right,
they're them, but they're a cold version of them.
Right, and so that's kind of a neat turn that the programmers are using as a diagnostic tool. Like, okay, strip off all the bullshit. I don't need to pretend you're human. Show me just your thought process as it's breaking down. So, like, that's a cool, like, reveal. And for the actors, they get to play, like, two different versions of their character, kind of. And then Dolores, back to her story. I mean, she's obviously kind of coming unstuck in time to some extent, at least in her memory, which sort of –
they relive the same horrors over and over again.
And it sort of plays into the theory I think you mentioned way back when we first talked about the show that William – that's in the second episode, you're introduced to William, and Logan's the brother-in-law, future brother-in-law.
Yes.
Future brother, who's also, like, as much as I have railed against the, you know, how we are watching this story, this fiction about these horrible things, and it entertains us, and it's like this, like, horrific but gorgeous Colosseum-type scenario, as much as I have said, you know, what does this... you know, us enjoying this, seeing these, you know, poor creatures be ripped asunder by terrible people, I know I would be Logan, hands down.
Yeah.
Like, that's who I would be.
So Logan is very much the prototype, like, Black Hat. Yes. And we've seen the Man in Black be very much this ultimate uber Black Hat. But Logan's sort of like that entry level. No, I liked – so when I was playing like Old Republic, I want to be Sith and just murder people. Like that,
I just came here to fuck a warm body and kill some people. That's pretty much the only reason why I showed up.
And he's
up.
Partnered with this guy who will eventually, I guess, be his brother-in-law, William, who's this very naive, sort of softer white hat, both like figuratively and literally. And he's the one who you see his storyline kind of intersect with Dolores fairly early and – leads to Dolores sort of questioning things and he sort of starts
well, like they meet up at that very fortuitous moment where at least
Teddy had met before.
Right. Well, like, and it seems like that's the clever editing part where it makes it seem like Dolores has been questioning her reality and she also happens to meet up with William and go on this adventure as she's starting to question her reality.
And all along with this, they're also intercutting what we think is Bernard secretly interviewing Dolores and sort of trying to push her a little further.
Right, and basically like maybe taking some of the safeguards off to some of the thoughts that she's having and let her pursue.
And had I read my notes again, I would have gotten there first, God damn it.
The theory you put out there that had been put out fairly early on in the show is that William isn't in the contemporary timeline but is in fact 20, 30 years past – the now Man in Black, who do we know his name at all?
No, they haven't said it yet. They've avoided saying it. They keep calling him Sir and things like that to avoid the reveal.
Yeah. I haven't seen you in a while.
Oh, no. He's a VIP. He can do whatever he wants.
Right. So only in this penultimate episode do we finally kind of get the sense, even if they're not the same person, though I think
they're the same fucking person.
Mostly certain they are, that that is in a past time frame, because there's a very pivotal scene you see with Dolores, and she is gutted open, and you see that she is internally very
robotic.
Mechanical.
She got the robot parts.
In the modern story, she is a little more like the rest of the people, where her internal organs are like sort of like printed, like, you know, 3D printed plastic something or other.
Somebody pointed out it was like Westworld is the world's longest ad for milk. Because all the white goop that they make, and then there was that scene with the one host going nuts and drinking milk, and the reviewer I heard said it was a very reminiscent thing, like since they're made of white goop stuff, it's like, was he trying to put himself back together by drinking so much milk?
Oh, that's gross.
It has a good effect, though. It's a very visually arresting.
Well, remember
kind of
the
thing.
Androids and Alien also have sort of a white, milky internal substance.
They just melt you.
But what I think is really cool, and the opening credits do this, and then you see it throughout the show, is they're very much taking that 3D printing visual that you see the arms sort of drawing and designing and printing these organs, and like. That's very timely, of course, because that's sort of a huge thing right now. But anyway, so you do get now finally in this ninth episode, and you've got a lot of the hints throughout that there is sort of this multiple timeline thing. And so much so that with the reveal that Bernard is actually a host, which
– first,
I knew people would be hosts that are in the support facility. Mm-hmm. I didn't know who they would do.
And again, people were calling that shit by episode two.
They saying Bernard.
I will say this. The reason why I didn't think that Bernard was a host and why I was surprised is that he had already been to the cabin where we see like the host version of Ford as a child,
right,
and his family. And so I thought, oh, wow. Like, no, like he is a real person. That and up until that point, everything that we had seen on Westworld is like, whatever happens in the park can't be trusted. Anything happens on the like
on
the operation side
is
real. And having that like conversation with Gina Torres, I'm just like, yes, Gina Torres is there, and they're, you know, their child died, and that's terrible. And then my friend, when they talked about the death of his child for like the second time, he's like, wait a minute, what did his child die of? I'm like, oh crap. But yes, I totally get that he's a host.
And then the last episode ups the ante even more. Not only is he a host, but he's an exact copy of the original partner of Tom Ford. Tom Ford? Robert Ford?
Robert Ford.
Robert Ford.
Tom Ford.
The designer?
Yes.
Yeah, and the director now?
the original Arnold. Which – the big – thing somebody used as like evidence was that if you do an anagram for Bernard Shaw, whatever I think his full name is,
Okay.
It said Arnold and then Arnold Weber or something like that. And they've never said Arnold's last name.
Right.
But they were like, hey, it's an anagram, and you know, could make this
sense though, Bernard Shaw, right? Yeah. I mean that does kind of that's an interesting sort of way to work it out. And I don't know if that's how they came from it, but you know.
No, but it would be interesting if like, oh yeah, by the way, this was actually the plan all along.
So what's really cool though is that narrative reveal that all these clips we've seen of we thought Bernard and Dolores are now really actually Arnold and Dolores.
Right. And that would also explain
I had it in my notes.
Because that was the thing, as you're watching these episodes, she's going down in these secret meetings per the editing of the episode,
right,
when she should be asleep by a campfire, right, next to William. Mm-hmm. I was like, how is that happening?
Well, but they also show the host routinely being taken out of service,
brought up.
Still. So they established that early on that's not uncommon and that's sort of transparent to the host.
But still, we would like she's right next to a host.
Right.
I'm sorry, a guest.
Yeah.
They wouldn't pull her out. So like now we know like there are rules, this and the other. My thing is, how the fuck can Ford get away with making a exact copy of his like his working partner?
Yeah, was nobody alive back then?
Nobody?
Nobody noticed?
It's not been that long. There are pictures.
Well,
pictures. Well,
they haven't said the way that Arnold died, but they did reveal kind of that Dolores seems to have kind of gone crazy early on. And there's that whole team that seems to be working around Ford. How much do you want to bet that she basically took a lot of them out and may have only ever left Ford.
Well, and I think
maybe Ford had some part to play in that.
After this most recent episode, and I got to go back and see where they actually talk about it, they basically said that the incident happened before the park officially opened.
Right, because it was in that little small town they showed Dolores going to, and they're showing them how to dance. They're doing this like beta testing thing.
But then I question the order of that event, because I thought the way they made it sound that Teddy wasn't part of the original group. Teddy came later. Like, Teddy was introduced after that. But
and Teddy has that flashback of killing all those people.
Right, so it was like, was Teddy part of the original incident?
See, I don't think so. But my thing is that, like, there has to have been someone. Someone, like,
who saw Arnold?
Yeah, who saw Arnold. So when, you know, Bernard shows up, like, it just doesn't, like, I'm not that person who, like, harps on one thing. You know I'm not.
No. But I see your problem.
But I need somebody to walk me through this because I don't see it.
Well, so ultimately,
it's like a magic eye. Okay. Like, I'm just like, what? Oh, dinosaur.
So the most recent episode, the end of it, the whole progress of the episode is Bernard Arnold is getting his memories unlocked by force. Like, he's gotten one of the renegade hosts.
Well, because Ford basically made him kill Teresa.
Well, and he's made him forget all who knows how much
and
stuff.
And prior things to that. And then, and then Elsie as well, right?
Yeah, so.
Like, so he's like, no.
Though they still haven't showed Elsie being killed. They just show her being, you know, put in a chokehold.
Well, but they also found her body.
No, they didn't. He got what's his name? The Hemsworth got grabbed by the Indians. They found her tracking device.
Oh, I thought they had found her body.
No.
Okay.
Oh, no, she did.
You think she did?
She did.
I mean, it's possible. But, you know, that whole rule from Lost, if the character doesn't die on screen, they probably aren't
sure,
dead.
Sure, unless you're Cyclops.
Well, yeah. Then you're definitely
that's
dead.
Not Lost, yeah.
But, yeah, so the end of the episode, you find out that what's his name? Anthony Hopkins is ahead of everybody, and he's always in control, and he ends up telling Bernard to blow his own brains out.
Yep.
As soon as that happened, I thought, wouldn't it be nice if somehow Arnold has his own version of his personality uploaded somewhere in the back code, and they can actually put that into the now empty Bernard body? So Bernard becomes Arnold again?
I mean, you do in the preview, and who knows, this is editing. You do hear Arnold / Bernard.
Oh, say the phrase, say the Shakespeare phrase.
Yeah. So, like, I don't think I want to write out Jeffrey Wright just yet. Plus, I mean, flashbacks and all that. But I have a feeling.
No, you can't. I'm sorry. It continues.
No. I would hazard a guess that he's not dead.
Well,
and he's not. He might be out of commission or whatever. But, like, there's ways around that to bring that character in.
Right.
Well, that first big, like, shootout in the first episode where we see, like, all these people dying and dropping dead and just, like, how brutally and, like, horrifically they are murdered and
mangled.
Oh,
that's true. Yeah. You're right.
And then they come back the next episode and they're playing, like, Black Hole Sun.
But they never have
a player piano. It doesn't matter.
They never shown, though, what the host healing procedure is. Because they show, like, the bodies piled all in the room and they kind of get them washed down. But they never
hose them down.
Yeah, but they never actually show how they plug the holes and throw them back out there.
Well, I think that's what the butchers are for, the techs, where they kind of like just stitch them back together.
Or like that laser gun that closed up the guy's slit throat.
Oh, that was brutal.
Yeah. Oh, I love that scene.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, of course. So some of the things that are kind of like loose ends before the finale. Maeve is building an army because she wants to get GTFO of Westworld altogether, and so she's sort of collecting people to help her with that.
The maze.
Dolores is in this thing that they're calling the maze, but really it sounds like it's just this sort of memory path to enlightenment. Again, it's sort of wandering. They even have a fucking Minotaur. I mean, that was the moment oh my god, you even have a fucking Minotaur.
Because what, like,
right.
What self-respecting labyrinth.
I was gonna say, if you're gonna call it a maze, then, you know, call it a damn labyrinth.
Oh, no, yeah. No, it was like maze plus Minotaur equals labyrinth.
There you go. Greek mythology.
Yeah. So, well, and again, there's a lot of that. So the you have Dolores kind of confronting her past.
Well, the man in black is on the same quest in the maze.
Which will be interesting now that we basically understand that the man in black was William. And
we don't.
We don't officially.
Don't know we that.
Never. This show has taught me.
Yeah.
Never claim anything.
I know, but
as fact until you have watch the it, receipts in your hand.
It's Logan. It's the other guy. No, because then they have William have that freaking psychotic break and killed all the hosts. Well,
and okay, and then the preview for the 10th episode, they also show William wearing a black shirt for the first time, and like, okay, so come on, is that another red herring?
I think it's – well, but like you said, don't assume. I do also so we know all that's happening. The board of this company is becoming involved.
They're trying to oust Anthony Hopkins' character.
And they're sort of failing at every turn.
But apparently now with the Man in Black sign-off, they have all the votes they need to just give him the boot.
Right. Except that – I mean, again, he's probably aware that that's happening. He's doing everything in his power to keep that. So all these pieces are going to play, and it seems like all these kind of storylines are converging to some extent, but they are going to do a second season. We know that. So I'm sure they're not going to wrap up everything with a nice little bow. I don't know if the Maeve storyline is kind of possibly one of those things that they, so one thing that, Pat actually pulled up a cracked article earlier.
Mm-hmm.
There was some drama in the production. We do know that there was some,
in making the pilot
stall and,
The making of the pilot took years.
Right.
Recasting, reshooting, all sorts of stuff.
The first episode and the second episode are very different episodes. Both you could almost see as acting as pilots.
Yeah.
So you wonder how much of this was happy accidents that they capitalized on later.
Yeah.
How much of this was, we think we're going to get a second season, so let's take this storyline and do a little bit more with it. I mean, there's a lot of things that happen during the course of a story, of storytelling. That we'll see how they play out. But I'm curious to see what that next big twist is before the finale, because you know there'll be at least one thing maybe at the end that's kind of the, oh my God, what's next? You know, of course, they'll have to wait at least a year to see another episode to find out. But I mean, I think Maeve's story potentially could be the next thing.
See, and that's the thing. Like we talked about at the beginning of the podcast about how, you know, the plan is always kind of going as opposed to like Ford's always been in control. But I wonder if Ford being distracted by the board issue and by Bernard's issue has allowed Maeve to get as far as she's gotten.
Mm-hmm.
Where that, because, you know, everybody supposedly has the back door. So apparently Maeve still has the back door to her programming that could still give Ford control.
See,
unless she's closed it?
And that's – so I don't like to speculate. But what I think is that the only person – let me back up. Since no one knew that Bernard was Arnold, I'll give you that, and that he was one of Ford's special hosts,
mm-hmm.
that – other people couldn't control, like when he tried to control like host Ford and whatnot. He has the power of narrative, and other people do as well. But I think because Maeve could control Bernard,
right?
She can no longer be controlled.
Yeah.
Okay. So basically,
she's transcended that sort of demigod level.
Exactly,
she closed her back door.
I mean,
I was going to
piggyback
off your brother and talk about how, you know, we have, you know, this woman of color who is, you know, risen above all the bullshit, like oppression,
mm-hmm.
and reached a status where, like, literally white people can't tell her what to do anymore. And
she's white.
Well, you know what I mean. You know what I mean.
Wait. What?
What?
Huh?
She's white.
What?
White people can't tell the difference. She's obviously white now.
So, like...
Thanks, Trump.
I think...
wow.
I think it would be really cool for that moment where they see each other. Because really, the Man in Black is not a threat.
No. He wants to do the game.
Yeah,
that's all he cares about. He said as much.
So the
basically
only,
leave me alone.
The only threats that we – I shouldn't say the only threat. The two big threats that we have this season are Ford and Maeve.
Mm-hmm.
And so for him to be the one that says, you know, and she freezes, you know, she pauses where she is, afraid to take another step, and she takes that step and realizes that, oh, shit, she's like Promethea, who stole fire from the gods and said, I'm doing my own shit. Like,
so you think, I want that. You think a good conclusion to it would be in some form of like Anthony Hopkins in a way gets overthrown. Maeve kind of installs Bernard as, since nobody else really knows that Bernard is a host aside from Ford, maybe that Bernard takes over the running of the park. And basically, it's Maeve in control because she controls Bernard.
Yeah, and I think that would be super cool.
Be interesting if that's where they go. I think she wants out altogether.
But she does want. She does.
Right.
Want.
So even if that's sort of the outcome for the park, one of the things you could explore is this sort of host entity in the quote unquote real world, and that does expand the scope of the show dramatically.
Then you're Ghost in the Shell territory.
Love it. So I do want to talk about the music for this show. Game of Thrones composer Ramin Djawadi is the composer, and some of the music is very arresting in its cultural appropriation because it takes that old Western player piano detuned thing going.
Is it Black Hole Sun? Black was in episode Hole one. Sun,
They've done a Radiohead song. They've done, oh gosh, I heard a couple different ones. You can get the soundtrack actually. I think if it's not all the way out, there's a like a pre thing out. But one of my favorite sequences is when they actually orchestrate Paint It Black.
Ah, yeah, that was during the robbery
during
scene.
During the robbery.
Oh, they beautiful. Also did. Yeah, that was gorgeous. And then they did Back to Black.
Yes, they mm-hmm. did. You're right. They did. So I love that. I love the sort of cultural – well, it's not cultural, but like the anachronisms kind of thing.
It made me think back to BioShock Infinite actually. Absolutely. When you see the barbershop quartet singing
and
a Beach Boys
fact,
song.
The show I want to say
– wait a minute. Back to Black, Black Hole Sun,
Painted Black.
Painted Black.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, there you go.
It's a motif there.
The creators of the show were influenced by BioShock.
Yeah.
I believe Nolan had talked about that in some ways. And, you know, if you think about it, yeah, okay, and probably some philosophical ways too, but certainly in that, you know, anachronism. So, like, the production values of the show are high. I mean, this is one of the reasons the show took a while. Not only do they have problems figuring it out, but, like, the productions, they even said it takes a while to shoot and it's very expensive. And so when they do their second season, it's not even likely it'll be out in 2017.
Yeah.
I have hope.
Yeah, I know. Late 2017 would be a lovely thing, but possibly more like 2018.
We can wait a year and a half for Sherlock, we can wait.
No, and Doctor Who as well can go long distances.
I think even The Expanse, a lot of the sci-fi shows were surprising hits.
Yeah.
So like Expanse, it took an extra long time. Magicians are the same thing.
Well,
they're both coming out finally now, and they wrapped up last year.
They wrapped up
earlier this year.
Expanse wrapped up before 2016. That one we've been waiting for.
But it was towards the end.
Yeah,
it was like right towards the end. They're like, "We'll be back." 2017.
Because I remember. Yeah. This is totally off topic, but I remember going to Goodwill and listening to iFanboy talk about The Expanse during their multimedia thing throughout the end of the year. Anyway.
Yeah.
So. We love the show, obviously. I mean, I don't think we would have – we don't usually devote too many of these deep dives to shows unless they really are powerful or meaningful.
That's what we should call episodes where we start off as microsodes.
And they just go a full length?
Deep dives.
I mean, they're totally deep dives because, I mean, we're fixating on this one thing. But if you're listening to all this and you haven't watched the show, oh my god, what have you been doing?
Well, question. What do we think the is at the end of the maze?
I think
enlightenment.
True autonomy.
Yeah.
Because somebody made the comment when the man in black was talking about looking for it. I think it was the woman, the entry woman.
It's not your game.
Yeah, it's not for you.
It's not for you.
It's designed for a host to win the maze and not a person.
Right. Yeah. Because they're going through their memories. It's this whole self-discovery thing. I mean, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't know what they're going to do with the man in black, really. Like you said, I don't know that he's a big threat.
Especially if his whole purpose in this, if he was William, was to basically just get there as Dolores is self-actualized and then so he could be with her.
He is terrible.
Yeah. No, but they talk about the barn scene now. They don't really show what happened in the barn.
Well, yeah.
No, I think if it's William, that is terrible.
Oh, it's terrible.
Because knows that – at some point, Dolores and maybe possibly other ones are self-aware. And what does he do?
Kills them all.
Just literally, I slaughtered them, Padme. I slaughtered them all. Like,
the younglings. I killed the younglings.
Well, and he admitted to – was it – who was he admitting it to? He killed Maeve's daughter and then killed Maeve. Like,
right, but he also was going through a bit of an existential crisis, a little bit of ennui. Like, he didn't know his purpose. So he was finally just kind of doing whatever he wanted to see if he still could feel it.
Feel it, right, and he doesn't.
But that's when he realized that Maeve – that's when he found the maze.
Yeah,
that's true. And that was the thing I also was not sure about. So – was Maeve's cornerstone memory of her child or of her child being killed?
I don't think that was a cornerstone. I think that was clearly a part of
right, but her they reality. Talk about like the reason why she was able to kind of self-actualize in that brief moment was because of some of if the host feels this extreme threat to one of their cornerstone memories, they seem to it was some kind of leftover remnant from Arnold. The way that Ford talked about it.
Yeah, I don't know then that we know what her cornerstone is other than if she's built that up around herself.
Like, yeah.
So that's kind of one of those things they do play fast and loose with. I think
if it's a cornerstone, it's a cornerstone for the next evolution of her being, not the original impetus.
And they can evolve their own thing. You know, those early versions of the robots could evolve their own story, and that's their cornerstone.
But, and then all that shit goes off the rails.
Yeah. I want more gay people.
Oh, my God. So this is something I did want to talk to you about because remember back when we were reaching out, they were reaching out to us and I was like, oh, they want – they were specific. They wanted LGBT representation. And I've said they're now like, why?
Yeah.
Well, no.
Show me the gay or sort of – I don't even see any –
Elsie.
Pariah. Elsie and Pariah.
Elsie?
Or Elsie from the first episode, like when Clementine – when she was down on the thing and like as soon as she was alone with her, she
– But I mean that was so like – disposable. It's very nuanced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, I'm not asking this as a crass thing, and I do just kind of wonder is
where's the gay sex?
Well, not even where the gay sex.
Where's the lesbian sex?
Well, there was some in that the Sin City in Vegas.
Pariah.
They did have some.
Don't know. I remember where I was at. I'm Logan, and I sat up in Pariah. That's what I do.
Nice. But I mean, there was some whatever. But I mean, I wonder if that was something they wanted to explore more and then the story just took them away from that or if that's something they want to maybe do in the future.
So, I don't know.
Because
Logan walked off with female and male hosts.
He did.
What is he from? Ben Barnes. He's been in something else. I haven't looked it up, but I know he's been in other things that I enjoyed.
Google that. So, I don't know. I mean, what else is there really to talk about with the show? I think we've kind of covered the big broad strokes and some of the specifics.
Let's pull personal favorite moments to end the show.
All right, Jeff, you're first.
God.
Ben Barnes, so you know, is an English actor.
Buy some time.
He is known as Caspian X in the Chronicles of Narnia.
That's where he's from. He played Caspian.
Oh, and he was in Stardust.
Oh, yeah.
He was in Stardust.
And the Punisher somehow.
What was he in Stardust?
He was, oh shit, young Dunstan Thorne.
Okay.
Pretty young then. Okay, so I will go then if you're still thinking. Favorite moment, honestly, I love the reveal of Bernard.
And was
Bernard.
Dorian Gray.
Yeah, but that was like some like low rent.
Hush you.
Well, it looked like one of those production companies that makes the non.
He's no Stuart Townsend Dorian Gray, I'll tell you that much.
I love the moment when Bernard is revealed to be Arnold. I actually was very emotionally moved by that moment. I'm not entirely sure now why, but like that sense of self-actualization he was going through was really powerful. I also really loved just seeing those moments in Maeve's journey where she really transcended through these levels of reality. And that, again, sort of sparked this idea that there's more thematic like Gnosticism and all that other stuff. Like anytime a show sort of transcends the sort of rote, boring storylines, like and there's something more mythic to it, that always, you know, gets me going. So those are my favorite moments.
In terms of the rote, boring storylines, I love that one scene when William and Dolores finally start, you know, fucking on the train.
Sure. I mean, that's...
He basically kind of prostrates himself in front of her like, I am just a man. I have a life, but I feel how I feel with you, and I must have that. That being said, it's a tie for the other scene where the storyline author guy pisses on the world.
That was also a pretty awesome moment.
That was a very – I
forgot
what is
his character name.
Oh, wow. Just pissed on it. Okay, that's fantastic.
A little diva story creator.
Yes.
Oral.
I think my favorite – I always gravitate towards, like, bold statements. But bold statements that come across as really, like, crass. So I think it was in – and I don't speak French, so you're going to have to forgive me. Trompe l'oeil, like the trick of the eye, the illusion one, where Maeve says, at first I thought you were gods, but then I realized you were men. And I know men, and I'm just like, that is such like a fuck you to the establishment, to the status quo. He's like, you know, you come across as such like powerful entities, but at your base, you are human, and I know humans. Like, I know you.
And Ford even reiterated that on the last episode. And he's like, we're, you know, Bernard, human. I kept telling you, you know, we're humans, and we're never trustworthy. We're always gonna let you down. I'm like, yeah, there you go. It's kind of a running theme that the humans are less honorable than the host.
And I do love that idea that Ford's like, look, consciousness is an illusion, which is actually sort of a valid theory in today's psychology or whatever that realm would be. It's not quite – it's whatever that is. That consciousness is sort of this emergent thing, but there's no real spark. There's no real like soul. There's no real thing outside the body. It's just any system that has that level of complexity will – something will emerge that's sort of its consciousness-like thing.
And that was the thing. Humans, we evolved past the point of having any outside version of a way to entice the you know, object of our affection. So we went internal, and we found ways to basically talk them into liking us. And that's why we got consciousness to get laid. That's to get laid.
But always to get laid.
I was going
to
use a less sexual version. No. I was going to say, like, you know... Like, Jeff, you're a dad, and I've got to watch my nephew go from, like, infant that's just there and all it can do is cry and it can't even articulate why it's crying to this little being that, you know, can say words back to you. And you realize at some point they stop parroting and they're like, they're telling you, I want this, and they have their own, like, personalities. So when you say, can uncle get a hug? And they look at you and say no and walk away. You're just like, you son of a bitch.
Yep. Yeah, Henry's already at that point. He's already saying stuff. He's already asserting his will.
He is. It's kind of hilarious.
Yeah.
But so, I mean, Westworld, if you haven't watched it, go watch it. We will be excited to see the next episode, the last episode for a while. I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about it during our next big monthly recap when that happens.
End of the year, I'm sure it'll come back. No, you already did that.
Well, we'll see. So, but yeah, probably not until next year based on our schedule right now. So if you do enjoy Westworld, please let us know what you think. You can either comment on this show on Nerdy Show's website, on SoundCloud. We always love seeing – have you ever used SoundCloud to like put little comments during an episode or during a song?
Oh, you can like flag a part that you like.
Like a little comment at a specific time, and then you can watch, or as you're listening or whatever, you can see the comments. It's really kind of cool. So if you haven't ever done that
– YouTube used to do that until they got rid of it.
Yeah, YouTube did have a thing for that. So please feel free. We love to see any feedback from you guys. If you like what we're doing, you really think it's worth like getting other people into, share us on social media. iTunes, if you still use iTunes or Google's version of that, Google Play, you can leave us reviews on there and give us stars. That actually does mean a lot. But just
– it's like that episode of Black Mirror where – you star people and you rate them.
I haven't seen it yet.
You should.
Really?
I need season three of Black Mirror is amazing.
I have. It's on my list. But that is very helpful for us to get more notoriety, attention. Finally, if you really like us, you like us so much you want to see this continue for years and years and years, you can actually subscribe on Patreon.
Give us money.
And say in your subscription, hey, I really like what these guys are doing on Flame On. This money is for them. We're not going to get all the money. We got to share with our network, the Nerdy Show. But that is always something that really – it speaks volumes when people earmark that for us. Recently, Ron came visit you, I believe, one of our frequent patrons. And he is – I know –
visited me at work. We're not having sex.
Oh! That's funny. So he was actually just getting into Westworld, so hopefully he'll check this out and enjoy us talking about him. But yeah, thanks for listening again. Reach us out social media. We're on Flame On Show on most things. Flame On Podcast on Twitter. But we love hearing from you, so please let us know.
Wait a minute. Okay.
Oh, boy. Uh-oh.
Okay.
Here we go.
And if you're not getting enough oral in your life, you can totally find me at Stupid Popcast. That's stupid with two O's and podcast with a P. Or you can find me on our sister podcast, All Queens and Me, also known as Drag is the New Spandex, where we did a lot this past season.
So busy.
We've been so busy.
But yet you're still not in drag. Why is that?
You know what?
I thought we had a calendar.
It's going to – okay, it's going to happen. Put it on Don't worry.
We don't know what's going to happen.
Shit, you remember the calendar. Also, you can also find my reviews for Westworld and comic books on scifipulse.net. That's scifipulse.net. Why? Because .nets are still cool.
And if you like to tweet at people, I'm on Flame on Brian at Twitter, on Twitter, on the tweeters, whatever. I don't know.
What's a Twitter?
Occasionally. Mostly cross post.
I'm still on Vine. Is that a thing?
I've been getting
For the Vine.
I've been getting political tweets lately from a friend of ours from college, and oh my god, it's the most engaging Twitter conversations I've had in a while.
Is it still 140 characters at a time?
Unfortunately, yes. I don't know why.
Best thoughts are made 140 characters at a time.
But no, our regular schedule will resume probably in the new year. I think we have one more episode coming out this year because this is coming out on a very special non-regular release date so we can get it in for the finale. So again, stay listening and we'll see you soon. Flame off.
Thanks for listening to Flame On, presented by Nerdy Show. If you like what you heard, please rate and review us on iTunes, like and follow us on SoundCloud, or give us your feedback at nerdyshow.com/survey. Flame On was created by Brian Pittard and engineered by Pat O'Rourke. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding the network via Patreon. Any size contribution gets you exclusive outtakes, episodes, and images from across the network. There's even more perks available. Just head to patreon.com/nerdyshow. To find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and other awesomeness, visit nerdyshow.com. And be sure to follow Nerdy Show and Flame on all your favorite social networks. If it's gay and geeky, we've got you covered.